Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab. Adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
This is All of It. I'm Allison Stewart. The HBO series Watchmen has already won 4 Emmys in the creative categories and received a total of 26 nominations. So there's a good chance the series will pick up a few more wins on Sunday. Director and executive producer Nicole Cassell has already won a Directors Guild Award for her work on the show, and she's been nominated for the Emmy Award for Outstanding Directing for a Limited Series, Movie, or Dramatic Special. The series has also become eerily prescient, from civil unrest to masks. The show, created by Damon Lindelof, blended American history, science fiction, and superhero lore to raise thorny questions. What is good? What is evil? And it is always a binary distinction. Nicole Castle directed the all-important pilot of the show. I mean, that's where the series gets a green light. The pilot opens with an epically violent depiction of a real-life massacre in Tulsa, Oklahoma, when in 1921, a prosperous black community known as Black Wall Street was destroyed by raging racists. Hundreds were killed, thousands were injured, and a community was decimated. For Nicole, who is from Charlottesville, Virginia, the 2017 Unite the Right March was not far from her mind as she worked on Watchmen, whose themes included the rise of white supremacy and police brutality. Nicole Cassell joined me on All of It soon after the series premiered to talk about making the groundbreaking show and all of its social and political undertones. I asked her when she first became attached to the project.
Over Christmas of 2017, I spoke to Damon about it. He told me what he was doing. I then read the script and it blew me away. And then I did a real pitch for it, just showing how I see it, because that's so subjective. Mm-hmm. So I created what we call a lookbook, and to really put into images, this is the movie I would make based on what your words have inspired. Showed that to Damon and HBO, and I got the job.
When you say you created a lookbook, will you describe what that is and what your lookbook looked like?
Sure. So it's literally a book. I work with a graphic designer, and I say, this is what I'm seeing. I'm seeing images from the Conformists to Amelie to a Rihanna video, Children of Men. And then together we start pulling images. And meanwhile, I write content, which is like first and foremost why I'm passionate about this. And then why I want to direct it. Really, those mm-hmm. obviously go hand in hand. And then technically lead him through it. Like, this is how... for this one, I said, this is the journey through the look, because you start in a black and white movie, then you crash into 1921 Tulsa massacre. Mm-hmm. And I wanted that to feel so real, and to be kind of true to periods, slightly sepia toned. And then you land in 2019. And that was, you know, an alternate history of now. And what would that look like? And so I just kind of paint a palette with images, and then I use sections on framing, lighting, the characters, what the masks might look like, mm-hmm. what the parallax, you know, the pod would look like, and just kind of, and then the wackiness of having Oklahoma enter it, and the blonde man, you know, his story in Wales, you know, suddenly we're in Remains of the Day kind of thing. And I said to Damon in the first call, honestly, like some of the first words out of my mouth were, it was like reading a visual version of the song Bohemian Rhapsody. And that, you know, if you were told what that song was, you'd never believe it could work. It's all these different genres linked together.
In a collage, but also each distinct.
Exactly.
But connected.
And then... It's a tour de force, that piece. And I really felt that of this pilot, you know, that you just go from genre to genre to genre, and it all shouldn't work, and it works extraordinarily.
How familiar were you with the source material, with the Watchmen Cockman book?
Zero. I had not read it. And I had heard about it, really, when I heard that Damon was doing Watchmen. Then I bought the book. And I kept it with me, but I never cracked it open. Mm-hmm. And then I felt, you know, it was getting so close to when I knew the pilot script would be ready to read that the fact that I was fresh eyes was an asset, knowing he was indebted to the source, to the book so profoundly. Being, you know, just being clean to it allowed me to be true to his words and put those and this story first and foremost. And to kind of play that side of the audience, because we want it to play for people who don't know the original and for people who do.
I was going to ask, because people who love these this kind of work, they love it.
Yes.
Capital L-O-V-E,
exactly.
Love it, to the point of maybe it being a little bit extreme. Were you concerned about that at all when you and Damien were talking about it?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And therefore, once I came on board, I then took that very seriously and took that responsibility on of doing a deep, deep dive. I studied it. I read it. I watched the motion graphic, the animated version. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we all had, by the end of it, dog-eared copies. You know, every department had it, and we had it on set and just as a constant reference. And, you know, so no, I put the story that Damon wanted to tell first.
Okay.
But I wanted to give the fans everything I could on top of the story visually as Easter eggs or paying homage. And it was incredible to have that book as a source of inspiration and the visuals.
My guest, Nicole Cassell, she's the director of Watchmen and one of the executive producers. So it's 2019. This is one part. We'll talk about the Oklahoma stuff in a minute. But in 2019, but it's a 2019 that we don't live in right now. Robert Redford is president. I think Vietnam is a state.
Yes.
The police wear masks to protect their identity. They have to have get their guns out of their during a traffic stop. They have to be released by another source. There has to be a sort of an okay, you can use your gun. What goes into creating a world like that? I mean, when you sit down and you say, okay, Robert Redford's president, then do you think about what the laws would be under Robert Redford? How do you create 2019 that's not 2019?
Right. I'd say it's kind of a two-pronged attack, and it really starts with the writers.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what Redford is president, and what are the rules that they have established kind of going into the story. And the first thing was just that the book was going to be history, actual American history, and then what's happened in the 30 years in between.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we in production were asking that question a lot, we would ask the writers that, or we would suggest things and we would kind of test it back and forth. But so it really is, yes, you need to know what those laws are, what has happened environmentally. There's not a climate change crisis. Alternative sources of energy have been embraced and invested in. There's no Wi-Fi and cellular because that might be how the big one got through. And, you know, mm-hmm. So just all of these inform really everything. And, you know, so papers all over newspapers thriving.
That's made me giggle about the newspapers being the big source.
Yeah.
Also, you know, I thought it would be interesting to have political scientists watch this.
Yes.
To see what would have needed to happen politically in this 30 years for
right.
the world to look like
right.
this.
Right. Yes. That's a good point.
It's kind of wild.
We should talk to them.
When you talk to your actors, do you bring them backstories? Do they come to you with backstories? Is it collaborative?
It really is actor to actor. Mm-hmm. Again, my first stop is with the writer, Damon, or writer's mm-hmm. room to talk about who are these actors, who are these characters, I mean, and what is their backstory? I need to know that. And then some actors really go deep on it and others not so much. I need to know it in case they ask, and also just to inform the space around them and, you know, what they wear, how they decorate their homes, mm-hmm. What they eat.
What's an example of something in a backstory that had an effect on a decision you made?
Episode 5, everything about this character's backstory infuses how he lives.
Okay, good.
I'll give that teaser. With Sister Knight, I'd say, so she's from Vietnam. So in my mind, in her home, there would be that Asian influence. You know, the dining table's round, wanting a circular motif kind of everywhere. And just you know, that delicate kind of play to Vietnam as a part of her history, her culture. In that Oklahoma dinner when Judd sings, they're eating a Vietnamese noodle dish. And so those are like the details that I'm not sure anybody's conscious of, but are really important to me.
Oh my gosh, I feel like I want a director's cut for, it'd be really interesting. My guest is Nicole Cassell. She is the director of Watchmen and one of the executive producers. So the pilot, like I mentioned, is so important because that's what gets the series greenlit. And it starts in the most interesting way. You mentioned it. It starts with the Tulsa, Oklahoma massacre, where sort of the, you know, middle-class, prospering black community in Tulsa, Oklahoma was wiped out. It's a real life event. Why did you start it with this? Why is this the place to start this version of Watchmen?
Well, full disclosure, that's a question for Damon.
Exactly.
So I will answer that when Damon was asked about doing Watchmen multiple times, he thought a lot about what's the equivalent of the Russian threat or nuclear war threat from the 80s that we all lived through. And what is it now? What is that hot button anxiety provoking thing in our culture? And he came to race, and he was reading Ta-Nehisi Coates's work, and Black Wall Street, and what happened in Tulsa was mentioned in his article, Case for Reparations. And that Damon didn't know about it blew his mind in the way it has then mine when I read the script. And I mean, obviously hundreds of thousands of people didn't know. And just the reaction to the pilot, people looking up right away, like, is that true? So I think because of how it affected him and the story we're telling, it was the essential inciting incident because it really starts this boy's journey, who is integral to Regina King's story. Mm-hmm. And we're examining legacy and the history of trauma, both conscious and unconscious. And, you know, to me, the most important words in the entire series are the very first spoken by the little boy in the theater when he says, "There will be no mob justice today. Trust in the law." And then he walks out into the worst violence ever. And it makes you immediately think about, for this person and these people, what is it to live in a country where you can't trust in the law? And there's people like me that had never had that concern before. And so we're just hitting that right up front. And that's a theme that ripples throughout the whole series.
What is it like to stage that kind of violence? Because it's clearly choreographed beautifully, but it's also incredibly violent. We see people being shot, it's in sepia tones, it looks all too real, but also like a movie.
It's extremely hard and harrowing. It's technically challenging, but in a way that's exhilarating. And I really did approach it as, I hate these kind of military references or analogies for filmmaking, but we did. It's had to be very systematic and precise. And so we had on the script that the boy and his family leave the theater and run, two blocks to the garage. And thanks to this book, The Burning by Tim Madigan, which is all about the massacre, me along with my assistant director and her team pulled vignettes that were true stories of people's experience, like real life
witnesses.
Yes, yeah. Witnesses who are their testaments to what happened. Huh. So everything we staged was a story we had read in that book. So we created that kind of beat sheet of what happens as people, you know, on that street, and collapsing time, but wanting to be as truthful to it as possible because it's a true story. And so we write out these little vignettes that are a combination of stunt work and background actors, and also working in depth with the stunt team, you know, how to do this safely. So technically, that's how we do it. We write the story, we cast the background actors to play these parts and stunt actors. Fortunately, we're able to rehearse with a group of the background actors in advance, which is very unusual. But in order to be safe, both emotionally and physically, that way we could then take this group and put them each in a different vignette and say they were then our point people and could be kind of help mm-hmm. take care of their team and let us know if anything was going on. So being safe both emotionally and physically was the priority. But then I asked Damon to write a letter to the whole cast and crew, because it was also going to be our first day of filming.
Wow.
And it was the anniversary. It was the 97th anniversary of the event. Uh-huh. And we wanted to show thanks and appreciation and honor everyone who was coming out to do this, because it was so upsetting. You know, whether they were reenacting being a perpetrator or a victim. And, you know, just from the cast, you know, his huge crew, it was just a huge effort. There were going to be more than people than we could individually shake hands for that day. You know, so I just wanted to embrace everyone as much as possible. So he wrote the letter, which was wonderful. And then we also had information up around the set of the actual event, you know, just so people could learn. And then one of the producers brought in a priest to bring us together at the beginning of the day to bless the crew and cast and the set. And it was incredibly bonding. And one thing that means almost the most to me now is as I look back through my snapshots from we had 2 days, 1.5 to do that section. In between takes, there's pictures of people laughing and having a great time. So I think we really succeeded in taking care of people and honoring them, and then doing some of the hardest things you've ever seen. Yeah.
My guest is director Nicole Cassell. We're talking about Watchmen. It takes place in Oklahoma, and Tim Blake Nelson's in the show. He's one of the characters, and he's from Oklahoma.
He's from Tulsa.
Yeah. What kind of resource was he?
Amazing. He's just a phenomenal actor.
And a writer.
And person. So his support of this project and what we were doing was invaluable. And he's also Jewish, and his mom was extremely active in the community there, or is. Mm-hmm. And so his perspective was wonderful. And again, just having his support, because it was very frightening to take this on.
Mm-hmm. What was something that he sort of gave you a bit of nuance about that maybe you didn't know about Oklahoma and Tulsa?
Well, definitely two things. First is I didn't know there was a Jewish population there, you know, and mm-hmm. that's very fascinating to me. And you know, and then just technically his accent, you know, he knew what this person should sound like, and to have that just gut trust in the actor to do that is great.
Also, I have to ask about Regina King, because there's just something about her that is mesmerizing no matter what she does, and then she's a good actor too.
Yeah.
Like it's charisma.
Yeah.
And her acting chops. When you think about her in this role, what does she bring to it specifically? This role of Sister Knight, this sort of avenging cop who can be as violent as the people she's going after.
I think she brings humanity to it, which in a way makes it much more complex, because she is your hero. She's our hero, our heroine. But she's doing pretty terrible things at times, but you still love her and root for her. And that's exactly that kind of ambiguity that is really essential to explore.
I mentioned that Tim was from Oklahoma and that you were from Charlottesville. Mm. Being from Charlottesville and seeing the Unite the Right rally, what did you use from your own feelings, emotions about that in your direction and in your thoughts about this project?
Well, when I read the script, it was, I was actually in Charlottesville for the holidays, and it honestly left me shaking because Charlottesville had been so upsetting, you know, and since 2016, the election, everything that had been happening had left me, along with so many people, reeling. And the script was my answer to what can I do? What can I say? How can I contribute to this conversation? How can I channel my energy? My passion for it was just inexplicable. You know, I gave everything to it because it's so important. Charlottesville really, you know, I say this word, really woke me up. Now I'm cautious with that word, but it was just to realize what was just under the veneer all that time. And that, you know, again, it made me examine my childhood, my upbringing, all the places we had played, you know, what the country club is, what that tree might have done or seen. Mm-hmm. And it felt invaluable to realize all of this history that's right there and all this tension that is right there. And my father's Jewish, you know, and we realizing he's living there, you know, in the way in which the Unite the Right was also attacking the Jews, mm-hmm. gave a whole other perspective to the question of feeling safe at home. And, you know, my dad's had guns for years, and I've always thought it absurd and didn't understand why. And it threw a whole other perspective on it. Of he's not just being macho or silly. It's, you know, his ancestors lost their land. His ancestors lost their lives. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not a question. There is trauma in my legacy that I have no clue to how deeply it runs. And I'm thinking about that constantly now. And what answers can I look for and find? But I'm very aware with Charlottesville of just looking at it all through a very different lens.
And it's really interesting that your way you thought about your contribution was, I can use this in a creative way. I can use all this sort of tumult and confusion and awakening. Mm-hmm. I didn't say wokeness. in this project, there's got to be something really satisfying about that.
It is. I remember I had an amazing moment with Lou Gossett Jr. After the camera test. He said, I want to show you something. And he had a trailer for a documentary he's working on that was about Martin Luther King and the rabbi that introduced him before his famous I Have a Dream speech. And, you know, I'd loosely known that the Jewish community was very active in the civil rights, but not, I haven't studied, done a deep dive study on it, and I didn't know that. And there was this, the way in which he said, he kept on saying, I've got to show you something. And so finally we found a moment, and it was about this Jewish rabbi and Martin Luther King, and it was Mr. Gossett needing to show me that. And suddenly tears just came to my eyes. I was like, now I know why I'm here in this moment with you. And, you know, and then a crew member went by and she's like, oh, does he have you crying now too? You know, but it was very powerful for everybody involved. You know, really, everybody cared so much about this part, you know, whether it's because they were diehard Watchmen fans or because of what it was taking on politically. And through this great storytelling and a personal journey, You know, and ultimately it's about family and knowing who you are and where you come from and the importance of that. And in this world, you know, it's very hard to know that for many of us.
That was my conversation with Watchmen director and executive producer Nicole Cassell. The series received 26 Emmy nominations.